So maybe a first question would be, give us a state of just your tribes. Madison has just been designated in December, Truax Field, as the home of F35A. Doctor, can you start? Give us an overview. This is a season for year-end interviews with elected officials in the Capitol. Democratic Assembly Leader Gordon Hintz represents the 54th District from Oshkosh. Representative Hintz, thanks for sitting down with Wisconsin Eye.
Right. Always good to be here, Steve.
Tough year, interesting year. How would you characterize it?
It's another tough and interesting year. I think I'll go with that. I mean, every session is complicated, challenging, full of opportunities, full of disappointments. But I think it's been a challenging year and a frustrating year at times. I mean, as a public servant, as someone who knows the impact that state government can have in creating opportunity and addressing the challenges in people's lives, I would say it's really one filled with missed opportunities.
Is it fair to say the Republican leaders didn't give the incoming Governor Evers any type of a honeymoon?
I think that's an understatement. I think it was about 12 hours or something after the governor was elected that the speaker made it pretty clear that, you know, he was going to sort of take a Mitch McConnell approach and give him nothing. And in fact, before he was even sworn in, you know, say screw you to the voters and undermine the democratically elected governor by reducing his powers before he and the attorney general were even sworn in. So I think that was a pretty good indication of what the approach was going to be by the legislative leadership in both houses.
That set the tone from your standpoint for the whole year, Representative?
I mean, the lame duck session was easily the most divisive act we've had in our state's history. I mean, it got international headlines. Once you start undermining what the result of an election was, we only have rules in a democracy if we're willing to adhere to them. I mean, that's, you know, it's kind of one of those things where we accept the outcome of elections. We don't try to change it after we don't like who won. That's what transpired here. And in reviewing my floor speech from that night, I said the most negative consequence of fallout of today's action would be on the toxic effect on bipartisanship. And, you know, it's hard to have any respect or trust for these guys when you have that being the first action. And I think, unfortunately, it set the tone for the session with the governor.
Is that still the spirit, or have some wounds healed going into the next year, next session?
Well, I mean, I don't think it was just the lame duck session. I mean, I think, you know, time after time, you know, there was an absolute refusal to, nope, never, we're not going to even consider taking federal health care dollars. Nope, never, we're never going to take, you know, move forward on medicinal marijuana. We're going to, you know, not take any of the governor's proposals on certain areas. You know, I think from an assembly standpoint, the fact that we, you know, took months to be able to provide reasonable accommodations to one of our members with disabilities, denying him, and then when you do concede and provide some of those, you can only do so by getting rid of longstanding rules of the minority party in the legislature. I mean, it demonstrates a sort of pettiness and, you know, power-centric approach that is, you know, not exactly you know, conducive to working together.
You mentioned some policy differences with the Republicans didn't get passed. What's your biggest disappointment this year?
I mean, the biggest disappointment is, I think, on the federal health care dollars.
The expansion,
you know,
of Medicaid.
Yeah, I mean, Republican states have been moving forward on this. I think all of our neighboring states have surrounded it. You know, Governor Walker was seen as the long opponent. I mean, as early as 2015, it seemed like there might be support, but then when Governor Walker was running for president, there was this just rejection of it. It had something to do with Obamacare, never, never, never. You know, I thought there were a lot of opportunities in both corrections reform and in taking federal health care dollars that, you know, were before us if people were willing to try to come together. And I think there are some free market things that Democrats don't agree with that Republicans could have added to taking the money, even for budget purposes, in a health care program that just were never considered, because it seemed from day one the goal was to try to thwart any perception that Governor Evers was a success.
When the governor signed the 2019-2021 budget, he said this does some good things. So can you name one victory for Assembly Democrats that was in that budget the governor signed?
Absolutely. I mean, as someone who was on joint finance the previous two budgets and was very critical of the fact that the record level of borrowing by the Walker administration, the number of delayed projects that were driving up the costs, and quite frankly, the condition of our highways infrastructure, the fact that we were able to get new money in the budget was a success. And that would not have happened without Governor Evers. Now, I was disappointed that it was a one-year fix or a two-year fix, yeah. And we'll be back in 2 years. But, you know, when you have to look for value in the work you do. And when the issues that you've hammered away on for some time, you're able to move the needle on it, you know that you had an impact. And I think Governor Evers feels the same way. I mean, it was his campaign, his success, his popularity that made the starting point further than we ever saw in the last 8 years.
You and your office have prepared this chart. What do you think is the most important number on it?
Well, right now, I would say the most important number is the, 69 bills passed?
Mm-hmm.
This highlights the fact that it seems to be a pretty intentional process to kind of starve state government of being productive or successful, you know, in any way. Whether it's divided government or single party control, you know, the legislature usually has roughly the same number of bills that are introduced, same sort of number of days met, same level of productivity. And obviously, sometimes maybe there's bigger bills, smaller bills. But the fact that the speaker chose to shrink the number of days by 20% that we could even meet, that we're looking like we're going to meet a record few days, and I'm sure we're going to adjourn early, I think demonstrates that it was an intentional strategy to try to make it so perhaps the number of laws signed by the governor is lower than normal or the lowest, and that less got done. And it also limits their exposure to all the issues that they're refusing to act on that we know are popular with the public.
What are your goals for 2020, both in terms of the spring session and then looking forward to the November 2020 elections, please?
I mean, you've got to be able to walk and chew gum in this place. You know, there are things that you are trying to stop. There's things that you're trying to support, and you have a small two-year window to try to get things done. I think that getting the homelessness package through the Senate would be seeming like something that I can't believe we can't get done. And the governor tried to go through finance. We've passed it in the Assembly with bipartisan support. That would seem to be some low-hanging fruit that, you know, I hope that we will act on. We've seen some more support for prescription drug reform, both in terms of Representative Anderson's insulin bill cap, mm-hmm. But also on, you know, pharmacy benefit manager. I think we need some changes to the bill, but I think there's an opportunity to provide more transparency and lower costs that empower patients instead of drug companies and health insurance plans. But the other one would be mental health funding. I mean, like the governor made a pivot the other day acknowledging that, you know, he gets it. There's going to be a refusal to ever take up the special session bills that, you know, would be small but common sense steps to reduce the likelihood of people harming themselves or others. But focusing more on putting mental health funding into schools to try to address behavioral health of individuals, but also protect others who might be on, you know, a lot of these incidents that have happened have involved individuals who didn't get the help or intervention that they needed. And, you know, I like to remind people the governor's budget included $44 million of categorical aid for mental health funding in our schools. That was cut back to $6 million by the Joint Finance Committee. And so I think there may be an opportunity in January. We'll see what the revenue estimates are. We'll see what happens with some of the Foxconn money because it doesn't look like it's going to be used. Mm-hmm. So that's why I hope we won't adjourn early. And I think that was the governor saying, we are all saying the same things on that part of things. Is there something that we can rally around and get behind? Because we had an incident in Oshkosh. I was talking to my superintendent, and she was sort of exasperated saying, you know, I don't have the resources. You know, we don't have the number of mental health professionals that we need, the ratios we need. We don't have the funding for school resource officers at the middle school level. And, you know, when you get tested like this, where you have to react and you have to use protocol and you have to systematically make sure that you're following things to reduce, you know, the impact, it gets you to revisit, okay, you know, what's happening and what do we need? And my district saying, we need that funding.
What has to happen for your party to pick up, I'm going to make up a number, 6 or 7 or 8 seats in November of 2020, Rick Gordon?
Well, I mean, the opportunity's there. You know, I came into the legislature as part of 8 Democrats that picked up seats in 2007. And a lot of the narrative was Governor Doyle pushing issues and saying, you know, if we can't change the policies, we have to change the faces. The fact that the obstacle to so many things, in my case, emergency contraception for rape victims, was being held up by my Republican predecessor. Mm-hmm. We were able to use that narrative effectively. I think that what happens at the top of the ticket is probably going to impact different parts of the state differently, but it wouldn't be surprising to see, especially in more affluent Republican strongholds, a depressed turnout from President Trump on the ballot. Can we ensure that our side turns out in those areas to pick up those seats? There's enthusiasm, despite the outcome with the maps that we saw in 18, both among the number of candidates. We always said we wanted quality and quantity, but also the quality. And we're close to securing some people that we hope to get started pretty soon.
What's your elevator speech when someone, when you call on a who you think might be a good candidate to run for the assembly? What's your elevator speech? You should run for the assembly as a Democrat because.
Because there's never been a better time to run for office. I'm just kidding. I try to, play to the fact that, you have to want it. You don't want to have to beg somebody to run for office because they're not going to be as motivated to do it. I'm struck by the fact, especially since 2016, especially among women, that are stepping up because they know that it matters. And we always need good people to step up and do it. I try to play to them and say, look, we need good people to step up. Nothing changes without that. And there's an opportunity with a message that resonates with people that, whose faith in government needs to be restored by someone that they think is authentic and is committed, to getting it done. I mean, someone who believes in what they're doing, that's going to come out in the people that they're trying to, earn their votes from.
And what if the answer, there'll be new maps in place in 2022. Come see me prior to the 2022 elections.
We've had some of those. I mean, this is an illegitimate majority baked in with maps that, I would say in 2010, one of the worst Democratic years in our country's history, we won 39 assembly seats. And in 2018, one of the best years in Democratic history, we won 36 seats. So, we had three candidates lose by less than 1,000 votes, a lot of them that, overperformed the Democratic performance. And so, despite getting outspent, I tell them that, has there ever been a more uncertain or more volatile, year about what's going to happen in November than right now? Who knows, what the new maps look like? I've had some saying they're going to wait. It's a little harder, perhaps, in seats that are drawn in such a way that they're not remotely competitive. But I've been really impressed by the people that are self-selected, that are reaching out, that are interested, and in those who are responding when I'm doing cold calling, literally saying, we need you to step up. I'm happy to talk to you about what it would take. Will you listen and will you get in? And we continue to do that. So, look, there are seats that were, 35% seats 6 years ago. Tammy Baldwin got 33% in the 23rd Assembly District in 2012, and 53% 6 years later.
I see.
And most of the voters were the same. So you're seeing changing perceptions, not just differences in turnout.
If impeachment plays out the way it seems, it's the House votes to impeach and the Senate votes to acquit. Is there any fallout upside for your party in November 2020? Or is that just a million miles away from where your local candidates run?
Yeah. I think there's a distinction that the voters can make. I think it's an interesting election in that we're on page one of the ballot. Every 12 years, I think we have a race with no statewide races. So it's the president and pretty much the legislature, unless you have a congressional race that's competitive. Mm-hmm. And I think that's another opportunity for us. But people have to make the case. They can't just run against something. I think that I think in some parts of the state, turnout will be enthusiastic for the president, but I think in a lot of parts of the state, it won't be. I think the consideration on the impeachment vote will be, I think for most of the Democrats, it's about doing the right thing. It's clearly there will be people who are upset, that maybe are looking the other way, given that I don't know that we've had a clear case from a legal standpoint, but we'll see, but I'm not focusing on that. I think that our issues are different and there's enough damage that's been done by Republican incumbents.
The legal fight over the 234,000 movers, those that are at different addresses, according to the ERIC.
Yeah.
Is that an issue that really will play out in who carries Wisconsin for president, or is that a very important issue to you and your candidates?
Well, we've had, you know, close races at the top of the ticket and close races in ours. So it certainly doesn't help in anything that you do to put additional barriers for people to participate in a democracy, I think, is a problem. But like we've seen in voter ID, all it means is that, you know, Democrats have to work harder and, you know, advocates of voter participation have to work harder at tracking some of these folks down and engaging them with, you know, a case that's worthwhile to participate in our elections. So, you know, if you lose by a handful of votes and you can figure out that that would have made a difference, you'll look back and say that. But we have a little less than a year to make sure we're doing everything possible to deal with, you know, the unfortunate legal outcome of the decision at this time.
The conservative law firm that filed that, Wisconsin Institute for Law and Liberty, said, well, you can always register an election day in Wisconsin, which is another reason why you should remove the 234,000 that have been tracked as identified as movers. Do you have any response?
I don't think anybody buys, you know, the excuses coming from them that this was something about just adhering to the law. And these guys know what they're doing, especially an organization that's funded by the people who fund it. I mean, their intention is to suppress the vote, to make it harder to vote, to lower turnout, especially in Democratic strongholds. And, you know, it's cynical and it's kind of embarrassing that they would say that.
Any advice for Governor Evers for 2020, since he will have been in office and for a year, in terms of how to get along with the Assembly and Senate?
I mean, I was really happy with his pivot again on mental health funding, and I think he will come out in the new year with, you know, a challenge. It would be not to walk away. I mean, despite some of my harsh criticism, you have to be in the time that you're here, which is a really short time in the grand scheme of things. Yeah. Always look for opportunities to attempt to improve the state, to try to get things done, and to not walk away. I mean, like I said, you know, I don't know if walking and chew gum is something we just say, but, you know, you have to be able to fight one day and find opportunities on the other and hopefully restore trust. I think Governor Evers is a really refreshing politician in that he's authentic. He's non-ideological, non-political, especially in contrast to everything that Governor Walker was. But, you know, I think it's been frustrating for him, given that he's a doer. He wants to get things done. He's more interested in governing and doing the right thing than perhaps politics. And that's a different game being played in the legislature. But I think if everybody, I always just say, like, think about why you ran. You know, because the longer you're here, your idealism gets tested. You get wrapped up in politics. Think about why you ran, you know, what you're setting out to do. You know, and again, if Republicans and Democrats can agree on what the outcome they're trying to do is and then have a debate about how to best get there, you know, that's the best way that government works and what I think we should strive to. So maybe my New Year's resolution is to get everybody to take a deep breath, you know, attempt to come back to the table, you know, and try to, you know, disarm, you know, what has become really a cynical political strategy at sort of thwarting the perception of success for power purposes. I just don't think it's why anybody, you know, including, you know, the majority leader and speaker, ran for office, and I would remind them of that.
So bottom line is it's been kind of a tough year, but you're excited going into 2020, Representative?
Excited is not the first word, but I'm fired up. Okay. I mean, look, there are opportunities, and, you know, the job.
Hopeful going
I still find the job really compelling. I still get up every day. I look at the Capitol. I think this is amazing. I'm not going to waste my time here. And I'm going to do everything possible to, you know, improve the state of Wisconsin.
Assembly Democratic Leader Gordon Hintz of Oshkosh, happy holidays to you and your family.
Hey, happy holidays. Thanks, Steve.
Thank you.
This program is a production of Wisconsin Eye, an independent, nonpartisan, nonprofit media network with a mission to inform, educate, and engage the citizens of Wisconsin. Wisconsin Eye is the nation's first and only independently funded state civic broadcast network, providing gavel-to-gavel access to government proceedings and events at the state capitol. Wisconsin Eye would not exist without generous donors like you. Please visit wisi.org to make a donation today.